RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Welcome in, everybody, to this Tuesday, March 19th edition of the Landry Football Podcast. We've got a lot on the docket today. We're going to focus on some free agency do's and don'ts. We're going to clarify a little bit of the grades. We've got our free agent boards, which are our NFL position boards. Had a question on Twitter about that and maybe some confusion. And listen, if he's confused, somebody else might be confused. So I want to clarify it and go over what the grades mean, gives you an idea of what's what. And then I got a couple of questions to address that have been sent in. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about how draft boards are formulated. As we are putting out our draft board starting this week, been working on it obviously all year long, going to have that as well as we get those boards up. We're going to provide you the scouting reports as well. So a lot to get to today. A reminder that we are fast and furious at LandryFootball.com. Folks, it is a great time to get involved with us with the scouting season's discount. You're going to get all the draft boards, all the scouting reports. You've got all the free agent boards up there, essentially the pro personnel boards that will tell you how a guy graded this year. So whether a guy's a free agent, he's a trade candidate, or whether he's released, you know how he graded this year. So our notebooks every day that keep you up to date on everything around free agency, NFL work, college, you name it. One-stop shopping football at LandryFootball.com. Check us out here. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at LandryFootball. And check out the Rush the Field podcast, which is a college football podcast that you can catch here every Wednesday. All right. I want to start with the free agent do's and don'ts. Talk to you a little bit about the process. During the course of the year, it's a process of your coaches evaluating your own team, your pro personnel department evaluating your own team, and your pro personnel department evaluating every player in the league, every other team and every player in the league. So it's their job to be experts on who's playing well, who's got value. You add in the component of the health information that you have, the medical information that you have, any character information that you have, any off-the-field situations, salary cap situations, contract situations, so on and so forth, and you have a good feel for it. Now, as the season gets over and you do your due diligence on your players, which that's been done already, and you also get your coaches involved and players around the league that they think and how they compare with those players to the rest of the team. So, you know, the self-evaluation process for NFL teams is never as easy as fans might imagine. The vision for most outsiders have of the process is something like this. Teams watch their defensive back get beat over the top for 17 consecutive weeks and conclude that the secondary needs to be improved. Well, if only it was that easy. Identifying the problem is only the first step. By the time the offseason begins, you've had all the internal evaluations, all the statistical analysis, all the analytics, and you know you construct that big board in your pro personnel side to where you see, you know, how your players stack up against the rest of the league, and then who's pulling his weight, where might there need to be an upgrade, what is the reason for the problems, and you know, why are you getting beat over the top, and whose talent isn't matching up to the cap hit, who's ready to carry a heavier load, and who's starting to decline, and just, you know, as opposed to just who might have just had an off year. Those questions have to be answered thoroughly. And then you understand by now the pro personnel grades. With blue graded players are the top graded players in the league. Red players win for you. Purple graded players are players you can win with. They're usually red in some areas. They can match up with some reds, but overall fall short of reds. And purples are very good, solid starters. Orange could be declining veterans or someone lacking in special physical or intangible traits. This is not necessarily an indicator of guys that are or orange for the rest of their career, or purple for the rest of their career, or red for the rest of their career, but rather what they have been to this point, green players or young upside players. So understanding all of that is very, very important. Then you break these players into tiers. Tier one players in free agency are starters, very productive in a quality position, who should have longevity. They should not have any flags, not injuries, not character, not age. They must be a blue or red grade player that can be a long-term contract. A rare elite player that makes it to free agency will cost in terms of average annual year value, guaranteed money, and thus years to the contract. Tier two players, category B, or compete for starting positions. They're role players that can step in and play at a decent level. They're shorter contract guys. Tier three players are backup players. These are positions 39 to 53 on the roster. They're roster fillers. They can be orange, but prefer purple. Shorter contract types, look for 1 or 2 year deals with no or little guaranteed money. And so this is kind of what you look for in those areas. Now, you go to LandryFootball.com, you've got a more detailed breakdown of what these designations are. Some other things, some do's and don'ts. Free agency, you must understand, is mostly bad value. I've said this before, but 80 to 85% of the time since free agency started, it's a bad value proposition because the teams will always look to keep their top homegrown player. So when a player reaches free agency, it's mainly because his team, the people who know him best, decided that his projected production will not match the price of his contract demands. And if the team that knows the player better than anyone else has taken a pass, you must give that some deep thought. With that said, 15 to 20% of the time, players can be on the mark simply because teams are squeezed by the cap. Sometimes teams can be victims of their own success. They end up with too many good players who require too much money, all too much money to keep, and they're forced to part ways. So players coming from that circumstance and stances are often better investments, but they're few and far between. And that is the scarcity that drives the price up. Supply and demand determines every market value in any business. You must know that. You must understand that. You must understand where that 15 to 20% is. You must have the money and the resources to spend that. And then you must have the commitment that those are transcendent type players that you can build your organization around. Because if they are not, then what does that do to the rest of your locker room with players that are better? Players in free agency usually fall into one of two categories: role players or players past their prime. Rarely are they difference makers. They are rarely available in free agency. Again, sometimes they are, but they are rarely, okay, because they're already signed or tagged by their current team. Understand that. There are exceptions to that, but we're looking at overall numbers. The salary cap doesn't forgive and it doesn't forget. You must get something of value. What is value? Immediate production and longevity. A free agent must be able to give you a minimum of 600 plays per year. Here's the other thing that doesn't get talked enough about free agency. And I'm a big proponent of free agency with the right guys at the right price. But there is a transitional period that comes with being a free agent. I don't care if you're a 5, 6, 7 year veteran in the league in the prime of your career. You go to a new team, new teammates, new coaching, new way of doing things, and it usually takes a full year for an adjustment period. Both ways, you do not have the luxury of having that adjustment period under a player that you're going to give prime money to. It just doesn't make sense. It is not like having a rookie player, which you might have a transition on a rookie contract. It just doesn't make a lot of value in terms of a guy coming in. Now, are there exceptions to that? Yes, there are. But exceptions, there are exceptions to the rule, and there's the rule. And that's the rule. Quarterback second contracts take up a large percentage of the salary cap. So understand that even though you're a team that maybe is in good cap situation, that's because you're looking at it now. You're not anticipating future bills coming home to roost, like a second contract for a rookie, you know, player. So keep that in mind, Cowboys or Chiefs or anybody that's got a Browns, you don't think that they need to be thinking about already, hey, man, that quarterback is going to cost us a whole lot in this next contract. It's the way it is. More mistakes are made in free agency at the cornerback position than any other. It's another little interesting denotation there. Long-term deals for young ascending players is all I want. If a player is over 26 years old, I don't give him a five-year contract. Even if he's a tier one player, and I never sign a high-risk injury player to a long-term deal, do not give a four-year contract or longer to a player 28 years or older, even if he's a tier one. Doesn't work. History says it. I'm speaking from experience. Players must feel a specific need and fit, or you will regret the decision. You must evaluate the player, not just what his potential is, but what does he do? How does he do it? How does he fit into what you want to do with your team? What does that player fit for you? You got to establish the fit and establish the right price. You must fill needs and make sure that the player is a specific schematic fit for your team. Never, never, ever sign a player and change his technique or put him in a different schematic fit. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Free agency has a place in building your roster if you find the right player to fit the right need and the right scheme. But you must make sure of a precise reason you are signing the player. Look, I'm not trying to be the buzzkill on the free agency period. We cover it as detailed and as precise as anybody. But what we're trying to explain from inside building a team, which I've been involved in and still do a lot of consulting work with, is convincing guys and explaining that this guy fits in a certain way and doesn't necessarily fit what you want. That is not a good move. That goes into, all right, you're going to wait 2 years? You don't have 2 years to develop that at that price. You've just wasted money. If you don't get immediate impact, you've made a mistake. Well, if you're going to change technique or schematic fit, it does not make sense. Understand that. And again, if you find that guy, then it's great. It's a real positive. But more often than not, 80% of the time, that's pretty high percentage, okay? When it doesn't, that's where the whole, well, hey, this team looks great. This team did this and that and the other. Everybody gets excited about free agency and panics when their team is not active in free agency. Yet, it comes home to roost every fall. The teams that draft and develop their own players in their system have the most success. And the ones that can identify guys that can fit what they want to do at a lower price and plug them in, they're the ones who have success and get value in free agency. The ones that overpay and try to make them something they're not are the ones that simply fail. Contract year wonders. Be wary of the player whose production dramatically increases in the contract year, as you're more likely paying for the production of the contract year while getting the production from the non-contract years. Don't forget, folks, that you need to have cap-allocated money for injury replacement and practice squad guys. You must have at least $6 or $7 million in cap resources for replacement for injury players, ideally 10. Okay, I always budgeted 10 for those guys. You must have $1 million of cap space allocated for practice squad players. 8 players on the practice squad, $90K each. That's going to go up a little bit more this year. That's for 7 and 20 cap amount allocation. Teams want to be aggressive with, will spend even more money on practice squad guys, creating more depth at the bottom of the roster. So ideally, I wanted to have a solid 10 for injuries, and I wanted to have $2 million for practice squad guys. Okay. Always ask yourself this question. This is a rule I always had before we signed a player. You have to ask yourself, do you A, have to have this player, B, need to have this player, or C, like to have this player? Better be A or move on. I mentioned it, I hinted to it before. Player must give you 600 plays or walk away. 600 plays in a year. How many plays can a player give you in a year, for example? He might not be a starting corner, but he might be a sub-package guy as a nickel or dime guy. If he's a core special teamer playing on all sports, all four special teams units, a core special teamer is a 250-play per year player alone. It's important to understand that. It's value in that. Budget sense. Stick to your budget. You know what a player's value is. You know what he's worth to you. You stick to it. If he's worth five and somebody offers five and a half, six, don't get in a bidding war. Just move on. Stick to your budget. If you spend recklessly, it will inevitably come a time when you need the money that you no longer have, and spending tier one money on a tier two player only inflates what you have to pay your tier one player. The salary cap penalizes severely for overpaying players relative to what their production value is. Now, you've heard me talk about this before. Why do teams do this then, Chris? Why don't they figure this out? I'm telling you what works and what doesn't work. The reason why teams do it is teams that are in a pinch, teams that are desperate to win, teams that have to throw the Hail Mary in the offseason, if you will, and hope for something happen, they take chances that are not good for the long-range view of the organization. This is why organizations win and lose from the top. You must make sure that you tell your coaches and your front office that you're going to grade them on how they do their job and not fall into media pressure. Because if you got to sit there and make the earth shake next year and turn around a disaster, you're going to go out and spend and spend and spend and hope and hope and hope. Because if you don't, your butt's going to be fired anyway. So why not give it a shot? It's not your money, right? That's the problem. Now you got a mistake and you fire a coach and you got a bunch of bad contracts. You've got great contracts for good players. And then you got a big mess, and somebody else has to rebuild. And it is just be thorough, evaluate who's doing what, be engaged in what your people are doing, and be patient. Third down value is a must. Never spend money on a player who doesn't play well on third downs. That's the money down in the NFL. If he's not on the field in third downs, he definitely does not warrant upper tier money. I'm going to touch on something that I just talked about again, financial chemistry. That's really important. You can't sign a player for more than the team leader or your best player at that position. This is about rewarding loyalty and maintaining a balanced cost structure within your team because it creates a bad locker room chemistry. Trust me, players always know what everybody at their position makes around the league. Know for sure what you're getting. Know the player you're signing very well. You must be informed as possible about a player as mistakes are going to cost you millions. You want to know that player's practice habits, his off-the-field habits, his football intelligence, and any of his personal shortcomings. He gathers his information through a variety of sources, such as a coach who coached him previously, a front office or staff person that knows him personally, as well as through psychological reports and tests given to him in the pre-draft process. This is why you hear me talk about, well, I don't understand why so-and-so is interviewing these people. They don't need this, or they've got their quarterback. You thoroughly evaluate everybody during this pre-draft process because you don't know who is going to be available, who is going to get released, who is you're going to be asked about in a trade, who you could trade for, who you're going to sign in free agency in 4 years. You better know everything you can about them. You're going to diligently reevaluate both his pre-draft college scouting report and put it up against your pro personnel evaluation for his time in the league. If a player's had problems back then, more often than not, it means that the problem still likely exists. Another thing, save money for something important. Save your money if you're not ready to contend. Due to the most recent collective bargaining agreement, now unused cap room can be rolled over as long as a team stays above the cap floor. So don't waste any money on players who are not going to help you. Save your money and extend your homegrown players. This creates stability within the team And the way successful teams operate, that's what you do. You know, you have the stability in that's just a term, but let me explain it again. When football is a game of a learned process, and when you learn it, when you have players within the system on a repeated level, you become better and better and more comfortable. Keep those guys in place that are pulling their weight, and you got a much better chance of having success. Those guys are going to be more valuable to you than they would be somebody else. So, you know, if you're letting a player go and you're signing a player of equal value somewhere else, neither one of the teams have gotten any better, because the lack of continuity is going to hurt both. And if the money's the same, you haven't done anything. Now, if you've signed a cheaper guy, that's often why people do it. Don't believe that your culture will change a player. Never believe that your locker room culture will change a person's behavior. It's rarely the case, and when it does work, it is only a minimum salary short deal. Give a large amount or long-term deal in this situation rarely, if ever, works. You're not one player away. Don't buy into that. One player away from a championship, because there's 100% injury rate in this sport. It just doesn't matter. Ignore the noise. Never chase the market for a player, and do not allow agents to manipulate you. There's a lot of pressure on GMs by the media and fans to produce activity in the free agency period. No one who has ever won the March race ever wins anything during the football season. You've heard me say that. A segment of your fan base will be unhappy. The local media will be unhappy. The agents will be unhappy. And you're sure to hear that you're not trying to win. And you will never get credit for the money you spent on re-signing your players, which also counts against cap, by the way. So stay focused. Remember the mission. Everyone looks out for their own interests. You have to look out for the best interest for the team. Stay focused on that. Set a price that's fair. And if that price escalates, walk away. This is not a church auction. You're on a football team. If you do so, your cap will be well managed, which is absolutely essential for sustained success. And you will have the ability to sign your own free agents first and not lose guys because you mismanaged the cap. They are the priority. When you're a good team, because you're a good team because you draft well. And always remember this. I'm going to repeat this, what I just said. Always remember that free agency, the free agent that you lose, hurts you more than he helps his new team. This is why historical trends show that it takes a free agent changing teams and systems almost a year to fit and become really efficient. As much as GMs think about dead years at the end of the contracts, they should also remember that the first year is unlikely to be a productive one. It can be, but the odds are against it. Football's not baseball. It's not basketball or hockey. And such positions are far less interchangeable between teams. So those are some things that I live by and I believe in. And it does not say, Landry's not saying free agency is not important. Au contraire, it is important. It's important that you follow those rules. And it's important that you are prudent in your evaluation and you know who truly is good and who truly has graded out well, as opposed to what the public is. You hear this, well, this guy's a 16th rank safety, because you read that somewhere. By whom? Who says he's the 16th best? What did he grade? Is it people that are qualified to grade players or just talking heads? Look at what we provide for you that teams pay for. And you can get a good feel for how our player grade last year. And it gives you an indication of where teams might be willing to pay this year. Really important to understand that, and really important to get good value. Get good value, sign your own players, draft well. That's the key to being successful. And you can see the ones that do that, they're the ones that are consistently good, and the ones that are not good. Done a lot of studying of this for years and years. All right. Want to address something up on the website. If you go to my website now, you see every position, how players graded this year. And again, blue grade players are the best. They're the top line players in the league. Red players win for you. Purple players are players you can win with. You want to be in the above three. Orange are backup production. Green are young players. Yellow is players lacking ability. When you go to the position, you see the guys in blue. Let me clarify something to you. You'll see there is a dark blue, which indicates high-grade blue, graded players. A light blue is a low graded blue grade player, but both are blues. Okay, they're in that order. Now, like for the offensive guards, there are no high grade blues. They're just three low grade blues. You know who they are. The reds, you see those. The dark reds are high grade reds. The, I guess you might call it pink. Some people are a little bit confused. May look a little purple. I apologize. It's pinkish. It's low grade red. It's in the red family. Folks, they're in order. So you got the blues, you got the reds. So in order tells you how they're ranked. Then you go to the dark purples, the light purples, the dark oranges, the light graded oranges, high grade oranges, low grade oranges, high grade purple, low grade purples. So you know what purples mean. It's just a little bit of a clear definition of high grade, low grade. Put a mistake on me for not clarifying that. That is something that is it's just kind of common knowledge to me doing it. It is not something you should know or would know. And so we want to make sure you understand that. As you go to grade them, understand they're in order. So the blues are just defined by dark blues, light blues. Then dark reds, light red, light reds. Dark purples, light purples. Dark oranges, light oranges. That gives you an idea. So they're still in the oranges. So you still go and read what the oranges are. You still go and read what the purples mean. You still go and see what the reds mean. But clearly they're in the order. So, you know, if it's right below the reds, and then, you know, you've got a color that looks pinkish or purplish, well, you know, that's low grade reds. Then you got the purples, then you got the light purples. So hopefully that clears that up as to what that means. Really important to understand, obviously, what the grades mean, because that is the key. Now, you will see some designations of UFAs on there. That was heading into the league year. Many of them have signed, some of them re-signed. So you kind of know at this point who's available. What you want to know is, as you look at who's available, and we'll provide names of guys who are still available, you'll know how they grade it. That's why we do it. All right, I want to get into let me go ahead and answer a couple of questions because they kind of go along with this. So Greg asks, he was having a little, hopefully Greg, that explains what the color codes mean. So he's asking me, for example, about DeMario Davis and Alex Anzalone of the Saints. Are you saying DeMario Davis needs to be replaced? No. First of all, these grades doesn't say who need to be replaced. It determines how a guy graded this past year. DeMario Davis is in low grade red. That's very good. Okay. That's higher than Anzalone. Anzalone's a purple. Purple is a quality starter, and he's in the high grade purple. So hopefully that gives you an idea on and answers your question there. Richard asks, what's your assessment of Pat Kerwin as a coach and a scout? Richard, Pat's never coached in the NFL. I think he did some coaching at the small college level, but he never coached in the NFL. He worked in the office. I think he did some road work, but he wasn't a full-time scout. I think he's doing radio now. I don't know him personally. Never met him on the road or anything. Never was involved in any of our personnel director meetings. He was just more of a lower-level office guy in a couple of organizations as he's been with. I don't think he's been in the league since, you know, 1990 or such. But he's really has no – never had any experience with him scouting or coaching. So hope that answers your question. I think he was from what I understand through the grapevine, because I do a lot of consulting work, I think he has some interest in doing that. He hadn't been able to do that. I think he does just radio stuff at this point. So hopefully that answers. What was your evaluation of Ben Roethlisberger out of Miami of Ohio? Ben Roethlisberger was really good as a sophomore at Miami and started to really show that he had ability to throw the football at an elite level. He was tough. He was big. He was physical. I saw him go into Baton Rouge and play LSU against a Nick Saban coach team and do a really good job, fought with an undermanned team. You know, a lot of people, it's funny because I can remember getting asked questions And it's important to remember this time of year because people say that, well, he played. I remember when he played as a junior. He played against Iowa and he threw a few picks. And people say, oh, this guy's overrated, this, that, and the other. Again, people look at the results and don't understand really what they're looking at and make determinations. And Ben's on, you know, certainly had a great career, had a really good grade on him. I had a 6.5 grade on him, first round, and he's been very successful. Maybe not as successful as some people would have hoped, and probably more successful than others. I think he's pretty much what most of us thought he would be. All right, I want to end the show talk a little bit about building a draft board and a little bit about how that process works. You've heard me talk about how the whole process of evaluating players in college come from a long process of two scouting organizations that assist NFL teams, that NFL teams actually contribute a scout to, National and Blesto. And so when the draft process is over in May, team scouts will begin to look and study players in next year's class. There'll be May meetings in usually in Florida in both cases for Blesto and National, where they really start to get an understanding of where the prospects are for next year. And so you need to start looking film in the summer and start making your schedule for next fall and evaluating players. Come off the road in November, people think you're done. Well, you're not done. When you go to schools in September and October, you got to follow up after you get off the road around Thanksgiving in December. You've got to spend time in December going back and looking at film on players you went into schools in September and October and going looking at later film on them. Did a guy get better? Did a guy get worse? Does he have an injury? Any problems? Follow up. Do a second report on them. Then, of course, each team has what we call cross-checkers, two people go into an area. Then we have over-the-top guys that look at the top players. You get a good feel for players and kind of where you've got them graded, and you get ready to go to the All-Star games and the Combine. And at that point, you start to, once the pro personnel department and the coaches get done with their evaluation process of players in the league and on their team, they start jumping into the draft process. Then you start to break down by position for each coach to go to the All-Star games, look at their guys, get background information, start looking at film. So this process that's going on right now that's still taking place, and people say, well, why would you be changing grades and this, that, and the other? What's going on now? What's going on is you're looking at tape from the fall. Everybody, by the time everybody looks at all the tape that they need, it takes you through April. So there is a lot of work that needs to be done. There is a fallacy that everybody's got their draft boards, people moving up and down draft boards. It's a fallacy made up by talking heads who've never been inside a draft room, who have no clue. Okay, we shoot you straight here. The bottom line is until everybody's had a chance to evaluate everybody and put their grade on them, you sit down in your final meetings. That's when you begin to stack your board. That's when you begin to say, everybody that's, you know, you bring up each player by position alphabetically and you go over them. Guys that everyone has agreed is a reject, you put on the reject board and you move on quickly to the next guy. Anybody that is draftable or a priority free agent signing, you're going to talk about in depth. And everybody that's seen them will talk about them. And then you will have a cut up tape of about 30, 40 plays of the guy that everybody will look at in the meeting room. Then you go to the next one and the next one and the next one until you're done with all the players at that position. You got all the grades, you put them on the board, then you get to hash it out. Well, I think we got this guy wrong. I think this guy should be a little bit higher. I think this guy should be a little bit lower. And you hash it out. You hash it out about 3 weeks, 3 weeks of meetings, 3.5 weeks of meetings where you go through each position. Then you stack your board. So this whole thing about your board stack moving up or down, no, what happens is you start to break ties. You start to take all the information, all your film grading, all your individual interviews, all your workout, all your medicals, all of that is digested. And then you start to put guys in a position. You grade them as football players, but then you put certain donations. put denotions on their card, not donations, but denotions that would indicate a potential character problem, a potential medical issue. You don't move them down because of medical or character. You keep them where their football skills are, and you put that denotion on there. That just means you pass over them if you've got a medical question or a character question. And then that's how you do it. So it takes a long, arduous process. For the purpose of what we're doing for you, we're going to provide you a board that gives you an idea who the best players are. Here's the difference. I've explained this in detail before. This is a generic for the league, for everybody type board. It does not specifically fit for any one individual team. For example, as I break down the positions for you and get them up there, that is a generic feeling of who the players are, and I will tell you about their skill sets. What is not going to be there that's a little difficult in what I do for teams is how a guy fits or doesn't fit and who fits best for team A, B, and C. That will differ, as I've explained before. Linebackers that would be ideal fits for New England would not be real good fits for Seattle. So understand that. And I think that is something that really is important that you understand. Because when you get in your head, this is the best linebacker. This is the best pass rusher. This is the best corner. This is the best whatever. It's not necessarily so for that team. And it's not how they will see them. But doing 32 boards, first of all, would get me in trouble if I took you inside a team's draft room. We'll provide some of that intel closer to the draft. But how I would necessarily see a fit for a team here or there is different than maybe a generic overall team one. So that's something to understand because you get that very often. I can't believe they took this guy when they had this guy on the board. You know why? Because they didn't think he was as good. How would you know whether the guy's better? Because you read it somewhere? Again, even if you read it on mine, it doesn't mean that it's the best fit for them. Now, in some cases, and I'll tell you this, if I were so-and-so, I would have done this instead of that. That's just my opinion, but that's that. But if they're not looking for that, that's the issue. It's kind of like telling you, you went to the wrong restaurant last night. You went to the barbecue joint, and you should have gone to the Chinese restaurant. Well, maybe you didn't want barbecue. Maybe you don't like Chinese food. Maybe you want a barbecue. The point is neither one is necessarily wrong. It's what's the best fit for them. That's something that you got to understand. Now, I'll tell you who I think are the best in terms of just overall generic value in the league, but understand that schematically, and this is going to be part of what you have to listen to the report, as to how a guy fits and where he fits. So hopefully that gives you an idea. But when you finish up your board is set up for you in your room. How you like guys, and you decide, you know, this is what you want to do and who you want to take in order. And what you do, though, with a keen understanding of good draft management, you should have an understanding by your final meetings where a likelihood of a player is going to go. And so as you kind of get a feel for where a player is going to go, this is something that's hard to explain. And I can tell you that the first couple of years, I was pretty decent at it. But as time went along, I got better and better at it. And that's just instinctive qualities of where a player is likely going to get drafted, who might take them, where their value is. And that's where you really can become skilled in the draft process, where you can say, look, I've got this guy as a second-round value for us. This guy's going to be there in the fourth round, and let me tell you why. Okay, it's not that I graded him wrong. No. He's a second-round value for us, but he won't go any higher than the fourth round. That's how I got Derek Mason for us in Houston at the top of the fourth round when I had a second-round grade on him. He's a great returner. He's a good receiver. Played for years and years. Fourth rounder. Second-round grade. We don't need to take him in the second round. He'll be there later. So it allowed us to take another player in the second, another player in the third, so we get all three. That's the key to good drafting, is first identifying players correctly, how they fit for you, and then understand where their value is going to be in the draft. It's kind of like in the free agency, right? Knowing where the value is in terms of what player is worth a certain monetary figure. And if somebody's going to overpay for that, let them have at it. But you need to know in the draft process, you're not dealing with money. You're dealing with the location of where they're going to get drafted, what round, what pick, and which round. So this is part of, I think, having a good feel for the draft process. We'll get into more draft management later. But so the draft boards are done and completed prior to the draft. They're draft boards up now, but they're not in any order. They're in some generic order, but they are not put in any specific order. It may be put in clusters. Hey, these guys are kind of the top graded guys individually. But until everybody collectively gets all their grades in and has their say-so, that's when the boards are stacked and are stacked late. So don't buy into the BS. You've been reading about every mock draft and every this. That's the fantasy football world we live in, and that's not the world we are about. We are about teaching and educating about real football from being inside of it myself and telling you how the process works. So as we get the draft boards out starting sometimes this week, we hope you keep that in mind and understand it. Hey, we appreciate you joining us today. We'll be back again on Thursday. Want to tell you again, remind you about becoming a member so you can get all these draft boards. Become a member of LandryFootball.com today. Take advantage of our scouting season special. You'll love it. And if you got a question, send it to us. Contact Chris, and we will address your question here on the Landry Football Podcast. Also, a reminder that we've got the War Room newsletter that is free every Friday, so you can check that out. Go to the War Room, click on it, put in your email address, and let us know right there. Give us your email, and we will send it to you free. It's some interesting nuggets that is not suitable for publication, but we wanted to provide it to you with a little extra for those of you that listen to this podcast. We appreciate you joining us right here. And, by the way, we are working on it. Probably next week we'll begin our contest at LandryFootball.com for the members of our War Room. So if you want to get involved in contests and get some memorabilia for your team or items, clothing items or whatever, we've got a lot of things that are coming up. So make sure you join the LandryFootball.com newsletter by sending us your email, and we'll get you involved in that. Talk to you next time, everybody.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
This is a Crush Performance Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
And of course, if you've been following the news lately, you've heard about the college admissions scandal. It got me thinking about college sport. And a tweet that came out from our good friends at the Florida Baseball Ranch earlier this week that I just had to respond to. Randy Sullivan and the guys there are top shelf for sure. You can follow them at FL Baseball Ranch. And here's the tweet that they sent out. The college recruiting process is out of control. Guys are expected to be ready at 14. Bigger, more mature players are committed as 8th and 9th graders, only to have their commitment broken days, weeks before their signing day. Randy continues to write that a 13-year-old came in last night saying, "I'm going to be a dude, mark my words." Listen, you don't know if a 13-year-old's going to be a dude, so I had to respond to this. Here's what I wrote. Randy, I agree with you 100%. Parents and players, beware. Keep your expectations realistic. Do not specialize early. 10 to 12 years on the bottom end for sure. Find a great program, dive in, and enjoy the ride because it's a process that takes years. Getting better is fun if you do it the right way. That was my response to Randy's tweet. I don't typically write back to social media posts, but I had to on that one because he's so right. It is out of control. People, we have to take our time when it comes to development. I think we rush it too much. It comes back to the whole specialization conversation, right? I mean, we just have to make sure that our athletes are enjoying sport through those critical developmental ages. And there are windows of opportunity in terms of development, very, very distinct windows that have to be addressed in the process of developing an athlete over time. You cannot rush it, especially when it comes to strength. Listen, the weight room is a very dangerous place to be. You do the wrong thing at the wrong time, you can totally crush future potential. So proceed with caution.
Crush Performance with Jeff Crichel can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.